Okay, so things are going to get more interesting in the sense that you have to pay close attention to what's going on today's as well as the next class, because the idea of, we'll talk about this idea of latent semantic indexing, which is one of the more deeper ideas we'll be talking about in the course. Okay. So I assume that you all have reviewed the linear algebra background, and if you didn't, you looked at the TA slides. You know, if not, you better do it after today's class, because otherwise you'll sort of start getting lost. Okay. So I am going to talk today about, so we basically looked at, last class we were talking about, I sort of foreshadowed what I'll be doing today, which is after the tolerant dictionaries were over, we were trying to see if we can somehow improve the vector similarity by essentially taking into account some of the problems it already has, and in particular we were interested in seeing whether the query, the keywords that the user gave, it's possible that they are not specifically present in the document, but some other keywords that somehow are very closely related to this keyword, such as, let's say, the synonym of the keyword is present in the document, in which case the user probably would be quite happy to have that document. Okay, and could you then find, could you then realize that? Now, one idea, of course, you might say is, well, I can just find synonyms. You know, I go to the Rogers Thesaurus and look at the synonyms for this word, and then, you know, plug them in. You know, whenever you look for this word, I'll also throw in all the synonyms. In some sense, what we would like to do is to compute the thesaurus automatically. Okay, because the idea is, what you are really looking for is not terms that are similar in meaning, as in, you know, dictionary meaning, but they're similar in the sense they seem to be co-occurring together in the documents. So they're sort of functionally similar. Okay, so that's something that you can compute yourself, you know, basically by analyzing the occurrence of terms in the documents. So if certain terms seem to be occurring together often, then presumably they have some connection. So if, and all of a sudden you have one document in which only one of these terms is occurring, then the other term in some sense is present, even though it's not directly present there. Okay? So that's the kind of analysis that we want to do. And so basically to do this, we will start with a simple idea and then talk about a much more general idea. Okay? Yes? There are, okay, so there are variety of approaches that start from here, okay, but you need to understand this, okay?
Are you planning to touch upon them by any chance?
I may or may not, okay? So what we are going to do here essentially is, in fact, I'm not going to do this. This is one idea for improving vector similarity, but I wouldn't do it today. I would do it along with text classification. We'll get back to it. It's actually quite an easy idea to understand. If I have to sort of explain this in like a very quick way, I would just say that suppose the user gave a query Q1, okay, and then you gave them documents D1 to D10, and the user sort of said, oh, I really like D3 and D7. Okay, now remember, you normally show the first 10 results, and then you say, if you want more results, click next. So when you say next 10 results, it's not required that you had generated the next 10 results until the user clicked it, right? You don't know what I did. So when the user clicks next 10 results, you can take into account the fact that they already like D3 and D7. Okay. So now if the query Q1 is a vector, it's a query vector, and that was supposed to be an approximate, it's an approximation to what the user was looking for, okay? And then they also kind of looked into D3 and D7 longingly. They kind of clicked on it and looked at it for a while, okay? Then presumably you really know that more even than Q1, D3 itself is a vector, right? D7 is a vector. So now I actually know more about what the user was really looking for. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in fact, I would say that the average between these two vectors is really kind of close to what the user is looking for. Okay? What relevance feedback basically does is it takes this vector, the query vector, and then adds to it a fraction of the average of these relevant documents. And that becomes the query for the next 10 results. Behind, you know, unbeknownst to you. Okay? So this is essentially a very simple idea. We will actually talk about it in a little bit more in detail when we get to text classification, because the idea, the reason it's connected to text classification is that this idea depends on the user giving you some sort of a feedback as to what documents they actually found to be relevant. So it's sort of a more interactive approach, you know. They give a query, you show some results, and they sort of give you some sort of a feedback as to what they like. Okay. Now, of course, one of the big issues is how often can you expect people to give you feedback about what they find relevant? Yes. That's the interesting question. So in fact, one of the points in this whole thing is they might actually be just clicking on that link, and that might be a partial feedback, okay? Or they might actually, so ideally, this idea will work for sure if they said, in fact, these 20 documents are truly relevant for our query, these 35 documents are truly irrelevant to our query, and the rest we are indifferent. Then I would actually say that take the average of the 20 relevant documents, subtract from that the average of the 30 irrelevant documents. That vector is the true query that the user should have asked instead of this little couple of two words that they given. Okay? Whatever I just said, in fact, I kind of, you know, hit the relevance feedback slides. But pretty much I gave you a summary of it right now, and then we'll come back to it later. And I think it belongs better with classification techniques where the user is giving some sort of a feedback to label whether or not something is relevant. The other two ideas that we'll actually be talking about today were basically done even before the user gives any relevance information. So in essence, you are just looking at, you are analyzing the document corpus itself to realize that if somebody is looking for the word computer, maybe they're also quite interested in the word science, because computer and science seem to be occurring together in my corpus. Okay? So this is a static analysis of the corpus. Okay? One other thing we'll see, of course, is these ideas, correlation analysis as well as dimensionality reduction, in particular, the correlation analysis that we'll talk about first, it's going to talk about what words are correlated with what words. And so the basic idea is you look for terms or words or keywords that seem to be co-occurring often, and in which case you would say they're correlated. And given the query words that the user has, you know, input, you would look for other words that are quite correlated to these words. And then perhaps ask the user, would you like me to add some of these words to your query? So this is sort of query elaboration technique. Before, it's sort of a pre-processing phase. You know, they entered some words, and then you are asking them, would you like to add any more of these words? And oftentimes, this could actually help you, you know, help the user refine their query. Okay, and then you go ahead and do your vector similarity analysis, right? Okay, so So that's basically, now I could do this using document corpus, you know, correlation over document corpus. What else can I do it with respect to? Query logs. Okay? So basically, in fact, you know, more often than not these days in the search engines, if you know, Google for example, at the bottom of the top 10 results, they will say, here are other query phrases that people have searched which contain the words that you have asked. So they're doing correlation analysis on the query logs, where a query log can be seen as a collection of query strings or kind of collection of little documents. Each document, you know, in the vector similarity calculation, we think queries are documents, and queries are mini documents. They are also vectors in the space of terms. Okay, so whatever I'm going to say today can be applied also to query logs. The one interesting thing, of course, is anybody will have access to the corpus. Any IR person will have access to the corpus because they're starting with, you know, corpus over which they're supporting queries. But only the IR people who actually have users will have query logs. Do you understand what I'm saying? So suppose you completed this, you know, course project. Okay, I gave you some number of, you know, documents to index. So you already have those documents, so you can do analysis over correlation between words, etc., over the document. But you realize that Google is doing query log analysis. You also want to do query log analysis. But for that, you need users, right? Only users ask queries, okay? One huge advantage a popular search engine has is that it has real people typing real queries. Okay, and so they can actually analyze these query logs. Some of the times, you know, query logs are available online, you know, so that other researchers can use it. But often, more often than not, they're not available. You know, it's only available to the people who have popular search engines. And so popular search engines can become more effective because they can analyze query logs that because they have users. Okay, so there is that you have to be, you know, you have to take into account. Okay, so before we go on and on with correlation, let me ask you the following question. So there are 1,000 documents in my corpus, okay? And the keyword K1 is present in 25% of them. K2 is present in 32% of them, okay? Now, my question is this. Are K1 and K2 correlated positively? Are they correlated negatively? Are they independent? That means are not correlated at all. What? How many people think you should be able to answer this question that I just posed without doing any more, without asking for any more information? Make sure this is, basic idea is you cannot answer this the way it is given. Okay, you can answer it in one particular way. If those numbers were 100%, 100%, you can answer it. 0%, 0%, you can again answer it. Okay, but if it is between 0 and 100, you can't answer. So what else do you need? What additional piece of information do you need so that you can answer this? What fraction of the documents they occur together? What fraction of the documents they occur together? Okay, so if I say that in zero fraction of the documents they occur together, would you say they are independent? How many of you think that they would, that two keywords would be considered independent if they never occur together? Raise your hand. Never again think that way. Because independence doesn't mean they don't occur together. In fact, not occurring together is a correlation. Right? If I have a body double, you know, I mean, you know, presumably they would not be occurring at the same room that I am in. Okay? And we are completely correlated. We kind of talk to each other and say, you go in that room and I go in this room. Okay? In particular, for this particular keyword, K1 and K2 with 25%, 32%, what is, so if I tell you, let the fraction of the documents that have K1 and K2 together be X%. Okay, now can you answer with respect to x whether or not they are correlated positively, negatively, or independent? Yes. So what should x be such that they are independent? 8%. Right, because the main definition of independence is probability of A and B is probability of A times probability of B. That's independence. Okay, and I gave you probability of A, which is 25%, and probability of B, which is 32%. That means 0.25, that's 0.32. You multiply them, you'll get 0.08. Okay, what that means is, if they were independent, then you would expect 8% of documents to have both the terms. If you have much less than 8%, they're actually correlated. They're correlated negatively. Okay, this is again, many of you probably don't have this problem. Many of you probably do have this problem, which is that independence doesn't mean they don't occur together. Okay, and if you don't understand that, you will start seeing correlations in the world when they don't exist. Okay, independence means they actually has a pretty good chance that they might occur together. In this particular case, you know, based on their probabilities, P1 times P2 is the probability that they will occur together. Right? So 8% of the documents, if they occur, then I would say, if the X is close to 8, then I would say they're pretty much independent. If it is much smaller than 8%, then I would say they are negatively correlated. If this is much larger than 8%, then I would say they are positively correlated. Okay, this is elementary probability, but you know, people, it's a kind of a intuition that you should have it for sure. Otherwise, you can, you know, start getting confused. Okay, so in this particular case, if X is much greater than 8%, it's positive correlation. It's much less than 8%, it's negative correlation. It's about 8%, it's independent. You expect overlap between documents. Okay? And if there is no document overlap at all, that means in some sense somebody very carefully made two documents such that they don't share words. That means they're correlated. They're correlated negatively. Okay? Fine. So you have the idea of correlation, and so in some sense, basically, to understand whether terms are correlated or not, all you need to know is to what extent the probability of A and B is different from probability of A times probability of B. That will give you the measure, basically. Okay? So if N1 and N2 are the number of documents containing terms T1 and T2, then, and let M be the number of documents that contain both T1 and T2, okay, then obviously if they are independent, you expect this fraction of the documents to contain both words. The total number of documents times the probability of first times the probability of the second. That would be the number of documents you would expect to have both the words. If M is about that, then they are independent. If not, they are dependent. Okay? And we are normally looking for positive correlation. Okay? But in fact, you know, much of what we'll be doing is looking for positive correlation. But negative correlation is useful too. Actually. Okay? So in this case, if the total number of documents in which you expect them to be co-occurring together based on independence assumptions is much less than the true number of co-occurrences, then they are positively correlated. Okay, so when I'm talking about correlation analysis, I'm given a term T1, I'm looking for other terms that are highly positively correlated with it. Okay, what I really would like to have is some sort of a ranking of other keywords in the document corpus, okay, which are very close to it. That means they are very positively correlated with it. In which case, I can ask the user, would you like to add this keyword? Yes. You could do it, for example, using Boolean query, right? Again, we normally tend to think in terms of keywords being present in the queries, right? Sometimes you have to search for, like, for example, if I want to know, is anybody else talking about my name, I should probably say my name minus ASU or minus Rakaposhi, which is my machine. Okay? So you could use negative correlation for Boolean queries, but mostly we will be talking about positive correlations here. Okay. So now the idea, of course, is computing these correlations, and you can do this again, you know, in a kind of an aggregate fashion over this nice term document matrix. Okay. So in this particular case, these are the terms and these are the documents. A, B, C, D up to I are the documents. Okay. I would be using TD terminology, means terms are the rows, D documents are the columns. Okay. And TD transpose would be DT, which would be documents as rows, terms as columns. Okay. Now, and also, in fact, I would ask you to get used to this notation, because this actually avoids lots of confusion later on. So if you think of TD and you multiply it by TD transpose, then you're getting TD times DT. Okay? What would you get in that case? What would be the dimensionality of that matrix? It will be TT. So that would be the term-term correlation matrix. So in fact, if you're trying to figure out how do I get a term-term correlation matrix given TD, well, TD times TD dash would give you TT. If you want document-document correlation matrix, you take TD dash times TD. That will give you DD. So no worry anymore. Of course, I mean, this is also can be said in terms of the, you know, dimensionality of the matrices, but, you know, this notation is something that's useful to have. What?
Is it how it is usually calculated?
Calculated what? Now I'm explaining what I'm going to do here. Okay? So anyway, so if I have these are the document columns and these are the term rows in this particular case, and so if I were to compute essentially sort of the similarity between terms correctly, that would be term-term correlation matrix. Okay? And if in fact all terms are independent of each other, then what should happen is I should get the term-term correlation matrix should be a diagonal matrix. That means only non-zero entries in the diagonals, because each term has better be similar to itself, otherwise you're in big trouble. Okay? And it's not similar to anybody else, because they are not co-occurring with any other term more than can be explained by just independent co-occurrence. So if in fact terms are completely independent of each other, which by the way is our background assumption when we said, you know, documents are vectors in the space of terms, and you tend to think of space as made up of orthogonal axes, in which case you really believed, you know, in one part of your brain is believing that terms are all orthogonal to each other. That means they're essentially independent. But the fact that you're doing this analysis actually tells you that you don't really believe that part of the brain, because we do agree that in fact our terms are not independent. So you have basically, as I said, you have more like these kinds of axes. They're not orthogonal. So knowing that you have a huge number of T2 instances tells you you do have non-zero number of T1 instances. Okay, here's one more point that, you know, just like the previous independence assertion, the intuition that I wanted to make sure you got, which is that independence doesn't mean they don't occur together. Independence means they don't occur more than what is allowed by P1 times P2. Okay, similarly, an independence also in terms of, you know, independence is related to orthonormality of axes. Okay, and here is to really understand, I just said here these axes are not independent, because knowing how many instances of T2 you have, you can put some bounds on how many instances of T1 you must have. Right? Whereas a truly independent coordinate axis, you will never be able to guess one of the coordinates given all the other coordinates. Think about the following thing. I have in my mind a 10,000 dimensional point. 10,000 dimensional point. So x1, x2, etc. up to x10,000. Okay? I have it in my mind right now. Guess what it is. You won't even try. Right? Now I'll give you, I'll make your life simple. I'll give you x1 up to x9999. All of these axes I gave you. Now guess the rest. Just the one dimension. It must be easy for you. Will you take a guess? No. Because your possibility of being correct is no better. Because knowing 9999 axes still gives you zero information about the 10,000th axis. That's what orthonormality means. Okay? In this particular case, obviously these are not orthonormal. So if I told you I'm in this space, I'm thinking of a term, I'm thinking of a point, can you guess the coordinates? You would say, I don't know. Then I'll say, well, that one has, you know, 15 instances of T2. Then you know, for example, that T1 cannot be too small. It cannot be 0, for example. You cut down some number of coordinates for T1. Okay? So this is the connection between orthonormality and correlation and dependency. Okay? When you really believe that the terms are independent, you would not be doing correlation analysis. Makes no sense. Okay? Fine. So in this case, we kind of know that they are probably correlated, and you're trying to look for, yes?
I get your point about 15.
No, all I'm saying is in this, so if I, in a two-dimensional space, if I have my axis like this, y-axis, x-axis, okay, I have in my mind a coordinate, a particular point. Can you guess up front? You don't know. I mean, it can be anywhere. Now I tell you the y-axis of the point I have in my mind is 7.7. Now can you guess the x-axis? Because previously you had to guess two numbers. Now you only have to guess one number. You are no better at guessing this number now than before. Because the fact that y-axis is 7.7 doesn't give you any information about x-axis. Whereas, if the axis were more like this, that means, I don't know if you can see this, but if my axis were more like this, this is my y-axis, this is my x-axis. Then if I said y is 7.7, okay, presumably here is 7.7, this much, okay, at least, x should be at least this much. I'm sorry, wait, what I'm saying? Oh, no, wait, what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Okay, you're right. I think this is, that's a good point, what he meant. I mean, it's a bad example. I need to provide three axes in this case. So what happens in this space is any two axes, even if in fact they are not orthonormal, will be able to span the plane. Okay, if I give you a third axis within the plane, then the third axis will be linearly dependent on the first two axes. And then you will be able to guess. Good point. Okay, but the overall intuition is the same, which is how many axes can you guess based on, I mean, how many, whether you can get extra information by knowing other dimension. That's the issue. Okay? Okay. So, as I said, if it was in fact truly independent, they would be diagonal. And if they're not diagonal, that means there is correlation and you should be able to rank them in the level of correlation. The only question is how to compute the correlation. There are multiple ways in which you can do it. One simple way we'll talk about is essentially just computing raw correlation, unnormalized correlation, which is essentially taking TD times TD dash, which is TT, which is term correlation matrix. Okay? So all I would do is I will take my TD matrix multiplied by TD dash matrix. Okay? I would get a square matrix now, obviously, and that would be a similarity matrix. In the sense, it would be symmetric. It will be symmetric over the diagonal. Okay? And I would say that would basically give me an idea of which terms seem to be occurring together more often. Okay. So for example, if I have this as my document term matrix, here are the three keywords K1, K2, and K3. Okay? And here are my documents up to D7. And if I just do the non-normalized correlation matrix, where I'm multiplying this by transpose of this. Okay? And if I do the matrix multiplication, I'll get that matrix. Okay? What this is saying is, obviously, the numbers on the diagonals would be biggest. In any row, the numbers corresponding to the diagonals would be the biggest, which means the term is occurring with itself more often than it is occurring with anybody else. If the term is occurring more often with somebody else than itself, that's like Charlie Chaplin coming second in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike context. Okay? And the other numbers basically tell you which other ones are occurring more often with it. So for example, with respect to K1, K3 is occurring more often than K2. Okay? That's what it is. Now the only problem with this is not normalized. So if in fact what you really want to know is basically if in fact a term is already very high frequency. If a term is already high frequency, that means it occurs in a million documents. Okay, then the diagonal entry for that term would be very high. Okay, and similarly, its co-occurrence with some other term which is also high frequency is likely to be very high. What you really want is not how often they are occurring individually, but at what fraction of the time when they occur together. Okay, to do that, you can essentially, what you really want to do is you want to make these ones. Okay, all of the terms, their correlation with themselves, let it be one. Then you would essentially, in some sense, normalize, you know, these numbers. Okay, and so one way of doing that is, so this one is giving you the CUV entries, and then you normalize each entry by CUU plus CVV minus CUV. These two are the diagonal entries minus CUV. Okay. The reason to do this, one way of making sense of this is if you are considering the term CUU itself, it would be CUU by CUU plus CUU minus CUU, which will be CUU by CUU, which is 1. Right? Okay, so this is a way of normalizing these numbers, and if I do that, so for example, this number 4 would become normalized to 4 divided by, now this is 1-2 entry. You take the 1-1 entry, 11, 2-2 entry, which is 34, subtract from it the 1-2 entry. Okay, 4 by 11 plus 34 minus 4. That would be 0.097. Okay, it's not hard to do this, clearly, right? There's a simple matrix manipulation. Okay, so this, I would say, is my normalized correlation matrix. And the advantage of this is, now all the diagonals are 1.0, and what matters is how often, so again, you have to understand that this makes sense because, for example, there may be certain words that don't occur that often at all in the corpus. But when this word occurs, it always occurs with this other word. And it's a very useful thing to know because if the user winds up asking this word, then you still want to add this other word. Okay? So this analysis allows you to look for those kinds of correlations without them being drowned by just the number of times, that the absolute number of times a word is occurring. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. These are actually called Jaccard. This one is called Jaccard coefficient. Okay.
Is it related to the intersection of?
That's basically it's connected to Jaccard matrix. It's also, in fact, instead of doing it this way, you can also compute these, by the way, as what's called Pearson correlation coefficient, which is covariance divided by the variance times variance. Okay, that's another way of computing this. Okay. We'll talk about that in a minute. So anyway, so this is your, if I do this, you know, over an entire document matrix, term document matrix, okay, then I will essentially be able to get which terms are close to me. Now, obviously, I acted as if there are only 3 keywords and 7 documents. Okay, if I'm doing it at the document corpus level, the number of rows would be equal to the number of terms in the lexicon. Right? And number of columns would be equal to the number of documents in the corpus. And you may not, you know, be, it's not, then you may not actually be as happy a camper, because you would now be doing this for, you know, I guess what, 3 million words by 3 billion documents, you know, matrix multiplication. Okay, so if you do it over the entire document corpus, you are essentially computing one static thesaurus, and then you no longer ever have to redo this again, presumably, if in fact document corpus only changes a little at a time. But another thing you could do, for example, is the following. Let's say you computed the top 10 documents using just the vector similarity, the raw vector similarity. Okay, now you have 10 documents that you think are relevant to the user. Okay, then just consider over those 10 documents and the words corresponding to them. Okay, or in fact, if not top 10, you can just take top K, you know, 100 or so documents, and just the words corresponding to those documents, and then see the correlation between them. Okay, and if you do that, you would be doing local thesaurus construction. It's sort of query specific thesaurus construction. And these are actually two different ideas. They have trade-offs. Sometimes there may be interesting correlations between words with respect to a query, but not without that query. Okay, so in the entire corpus, the correlation is too weak. But if you only take the documents that are kind of reasonably highly ranked for a query, then there may be a much higher correlation. Okay, that would be called local thesaurus construction, and that's an easier thing to do. And in fact, I think as part of the project part 3, one idea you can try is to just support local thesaurus construction to elaborate the query. And so basically you would do this, you would look for the closest words and suggest to the user, would you like to add any of these words? Okay, this is actually going to be also useful, okay, in the following sense. Suppose the user asked for the word bush, and you did a vector similarity and found that the top 100 top 100 results you came up with, you then did this analysis, and then you found the two words that are closely connected to the word bush are George and Kalahari. Okay, that's fine, because like about 50 of the top 100 have Kalahari Bushmen, and about 25 of the top 100 have George Bush. So now when you ask the user, you know, would you like to add either George or Kalahari, and if the user actually picks one of them, they gave you extremely useful information. Because originally the word bush was a query that was ambiguous. It could be about Kalahari Bushman or about George. And you basically, on this sort of a local thesaurus construction, you found there is functional correlation between the word bush and either with George or with Kalahari. And so when I tell you which one I'm really interested in, then you get to tell me results that are much more relevant to me. Okay, so this is how correlation analysis handles, in this particular case, polysemy. Polysemy means a word which has multiple meanings. The word bush really has two different meanings, right? It could be George Bush or it could be Kalahari Bushman. And by looking at the other words that are closely correlated with this word and letting the user pick which one, you made your life, made your, the user's life simple too. Okay. So that's one idea. Yes.
The reason why I was asking about intersection is that, how do we know a cutoff? Because it's not like...
I mean, basically, just take top K right now. Okay, you could decide how many you want to suggest. how many terms you want to suggest as suggestions. There is no obvious cutoff in these things.
It's like if the top k, if only m of the top k are positively correlated and the m plus 1th is independent.
No, again, I think that's a second order question. I understand, you know, that's an interesting question, but let's first understand the first order point of how to even find the closely similar words. Okay. And so right now I would assume that I'm looking for just the top three close by words, but you could then improve it by saying only if they are correlated at least by this much, then you could avoid negative correlations, for example. Okay. Now, talking so much about George and Bush and Kalahari, suppose in my document collection I have 200 documents which have Bush and Iraq occurring together, another 200 documents with Iraq and Saddam occurring together. Okay, then friend of a friend is my friend, right? Right. If in fact, you know, Bush is a friend of Iraq in this correlation sense, and Iraq is a friend of Saddam in this correlation sense, then I must say Bush is a friend of Saddam, which we all knew anyway. Okay, but you know, it's good that latent semantic indexing is telling us. I mean, the correlation analysis is telling us that. So in particular, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I want to take this analysis one step further. Until now I got normalized correlations between a word and another word, but I want to close it transitively. Okay? So what I want to do is, this word is similar to this word, and this word is similar to this word. So in some sense, this word is similar to this word, even if in fact there are no documents where these two words are occurring together. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Is that really a good idea?
Why is it not a good idea? No, I mean, again, it could, I understand, but it could also, I mean, for all, I can give you, in this particular case, I gave you an example where you would agree that it is a good idea. You know, Bush, when people are looking for Bush, maybe they're looking for the interesting interactions between Bush and Saddam. Okay, now I would say that Bush and Kalahari may not, so in this case, so transitivity, you know, all of these are essentially ideas for looking for other correlated words. And when you are, you know, closing the transitivity, when you're closing the correlation transitively, the idea is to catch the situations where for some fortuitous reasons, a third word which should really be correlated to this was not present in your document corpus, in any document, but really they are connected, you know, implicitly. Okay, so the cute thing about that is, how do I do that? Well, think about this matrix here. I could say that this matrix now has the keyword K1 is really a vector in the space of other keywords. Okay, so we talked about documents being vector in the space of keywords. We talked about keywords being vectors in the space of documents. Now I'll say keywords are vectors in the space of other keywords. It looks like that, right? I mean, it's a nice little vector. And if you have vector, if you have a huge, big hammer, what do? Everything looks like a nail, you know, hit all the people on the head. And if you have vector similarity and you know cosine distance, then anytime you see a vector, find the cosine distance between the vectors. And it turns out that if I think of this as the K1 vector, this as the K2 vector, then the cosine distance between the K1 and K2 vectors would take into account the transitive connections between K1 and K2 through other keywords. Okay? So nice, cute idea. And so all I'm going to do now is I'm going to compute a third matrix from the previous normalized matrix, okay, which would basically take, for the uvth item, it will just take the cosine distance between the uth vector and vth vector. Okay? And it would still keep the diagonal numbers to be 1. And it would make some of the faraway number, some of the other guys increase in correlation, because if there is, they cannot reduce the correlation, but it can increase in correlation because of because it's present with other words. Okay. So for our particular thing, so here is my original keyword document matrix, and here is my normalized correlation matrix, and here is my matrix I get where each term here, this term here is the, is this term here is the vector similarity between the first and the second rows. And of course, similarly, this term would be the vector similarity between the second and the first rows, which would be the same as that between first and second rows. So once again, it will be a symmetric matrix. Okay? Yes?
How would you compare the appropriateness of this with just doing the vector similarity in the space where documents are the axis?
No, again, I'm not sure I understand it. This, so basically, it depends on whether you believe this argument, essentially. To the extent, there are words that are correlated because of loop chains through other words, this analysis will capture it for you. Okay? If in fact, the reason, so the problem of course is that this could be a bad thing if in fact the document has like 15 different parts, and there really isn't any correlation between the first paragraph they talked about Bush, second paragraph they talked about global ecology, and the third paragraph they talked about Africa, in which case the fact that in the entire document these two words are present doesn't necessarily mean they are connected. To the extent you believe that co-occurrence means connected, this idea makes sense. Okay? So, if you do it this way, then again, you know, if I had this matrix for any keyword, you know, let's say if the user said this is my query word, I would have said, well, if I were to suggest to you one more word, I would suggest this. Okay? And now, basically what happened was, you'll notice that the guy who really increased is the second guy. Okay? Because if you think in terms of this one used to be 0.01, it became 0.226. It doubled in importance. Okay, it still is lower than 0.383. And in fact, this kind of a transitive thing might make somebody who is number 2 here could become number 1 here, if you have a large enough matrix and you can set up, you know, correlations differently. Okay, so the point of this is it is capturing transitive correlations between keywords. Okay, not just co-occurrence based correlation. Okay, so either way, you could, so if these are called association clusters, if you want to use exact terms, you know, and these are called scalar clusters. And where the idea cluster here is, given a term, a K cluster for the term is the K closest terms as given by this analysis. Okay? Okay, now, these I made up previously, so you had no real idea what these keywords meant, okay? So I am giving you an example for the one that we love, which is database SQL one, because we'll keep talking about it all the time. So you can remember that six words, the first three words are sort of database-y, and the last three words are data statistics oriented, data mining oriented, yes.
Actually, going back to the previous
Yeah.
I mean, how would that look in, like, what are the axes?
No, I mean, I can actually say, no, basically, no, I think, okay, so here's the idea. I can, so here is a class, right? I can identify myself in terms of my friendliness to each one of you here. Okay? I hope, unless I am some sort of a self-loathing person, I am quite friendly to myself. Okay, and you are quite friendly to yourself, and then, but the way we are friendly to other people in this class is different, and presumably it can uniquely identify us. It's as good a coordinate system as any. Okay? Okay. So in this case, I have the documents and terms matrix of, you know, with this database regression example, and if I do the same kind of analysis, this would be the unnormalized correlation matrix. And this would be the association clusters, which are normalized. And according to this, you are seeing that the database is most related to the word SQL and second most related to the word index. So that's not bad. So in fact, if somebody says database, you could say, are you into database and SQL or are you into database and index? Not too bad. Okay. Now if I do this analysis one more level, wow, okay, this I one day my son told me how to do this. So I did that. The scalar clusters basically essentially are doing each of these as the vectors and taking the vector similarity between the two vectors. And if you do it this way, then again you have a symmetric matrix except the numbers change. In this particular case, notice that the word SQL is even more closely similar. But on the other word, on the other hand, the word index jumped all the way from 0.44 to 0.82. Okay? Just a second. Okay. So note, basically index became much closer to the word database because of this transitivity analysis.
You find some change in order.
What?
There's a change in order somewhere.
Yeah, in this case it isn't, but it increased the thing. I just took the example that I gave. I did not construct one. Yes. What?
Even SQL and index can be correlated. How can you suggest database?
No. All I am asking the user is, look, you said the keyword database, and here are the other words I found that are functionally close, you know, correlated well, which is index and SQL. Would you like to add any of these? They can add just one, they can add all two. Okay, now the interesting thing is, when I found this, in fact, the two array correlations will only capture whether these two things occurred together. Okay, the fact that I am highly correlated to X, okay, and I'm also highly correlated to Y, can many a time mean that X and Y would like each other. It also could mean that they're actually not connected, because there is no real data, there is no document where, in fact, all three terms are occurring. If you want the three-array correlation, you need to compute it separately. Here, we are computing the three-array, in fact, transitive correlation by assuming that the correlation is friendship.
Let's suppose if you don't have database corpus, can we use SQL and index as a query for our internal?
Yes. So in fact, one of the advantages is that had you done this on, let's say, statically, had you done this statically and computed a big thesaurus, and then among your own little corpus, you know, a smaller corpus, the keyword that the user asked isn't even existing. But then you can say, well, based on the bigger corpus analysis, database is connected to SQL and index, and would you like any of those? And I will check if I have those. Okay? Yes. So every possible idea that I would describe in this course has huge number of counterexamples as to why it won't work. Okay? The real question is whether, whether or not this will eventually be useful, you need to do a large scale study. The fact that people did work on this, basically, I have words for this, means somebody actually evaluated them at some point of time. Okay? Now you are talking about your problem, right? But remember that in practice, vector similarity based ranking of documents cannot make sense. I can give you, if you allow me to construct a corpus, I could give you a corpus where what you are looking for should not be in the top 10 according to the vector similarity, because I'm converting documents into bag of words. Okay, so the idea is for everything I tell you, you will be able to find a counterexample. That doesn't yet mean. So that, in fact, that's a completely bad idea. To actually see whether or not it's a good idea, you really need to do large-scale study. Okay? I mean, these are reasonable questions, but all I'm saying is, because I'll be talking about more things as we go on, and for everything I can ever tell you, you will be able to think of a counterexample. Because remember where we started from. We started from bag of words model. No, you can't get all that far, you know, from there. Okay. The other thing you could do is, instead of document corpus, so I already said two different variations of using document corpus. One is the entire document corpus, in which case it becomes a global thesaurus construction. You could just take the top k documents that are sort of relevant to this query according to vector similarity, and then do this analysis. That would become a local thesaurus construction. And an orthogonal idea is, ignore the document corpus, use the query log. Okay? It too can tell you what words seem to be most correlated with other words that the users are searching for. Okay? The semantics are different. In the previous case, correlation meant these two are present in a document together.